This episode of The Selling Out Show is brought to you by our partners at Wonky Weeds. All set to relax, sit back, and just let your mind wander freely after a hectic day? Check out Wonky Weeds' delicious Delta 8 edibles. Wonky Weeds Delta 8 comes from U.S. grown hemp, free from chemicals and pesticides. Use code SELLINGOUT20 for 20% off your entire order. You can find their amazing line of products at wonkyweeds.com.
What it does is reaches into your brain chemically and locates your happiest memory chemically, and then locks onto that emotion and freezes it chemically, and then it keeps your happy.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to The Selling Out Show, the only program online dedicated to giving you the truth about balsamic vinegar. Ha ha ha, just kidding. Yes, right, I'm just a little prankster. Nope, we screw up life at our leisure for your listening pleasure. Who knows? The vinegar talk may come up later, but it's not really on the docket per se. I am one of your hosts, David Chicharone, and over here by my side is my partner in crime and good pal, Nate Gorzinski. Nate, what is crack-a-lacking, guy?
Definitely a lot of balsamic vinegar. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Are you sweet? Really a fan?
I am.
Nice.
It's tart. It's kind of sweet, you know? It's pretty good. But no, overall, I'm doing all right, man. It's been all right, man. It's been kind of a weird week, to be honest. But,
really?
Weird, yeah. How? Well, a few years back, not to get into too much detail, but one of our childhood friends, was killed, was murdered by someone. And it was this big, crazy situation. And then it got continued and continued, the court date of this person that did it. They caught the guy, obviously. And because of the pandemic and just the slow wheels of justice, it just went really slowly. And finally, the guy was sentenced just like last week. So it was a lot of emotions going through. There was obviously thinking about all that was kind of rough, but on the positive side, I got to see a lot of old friends who I hadn't seen in a while. It brought a lot of us together. And I like to think that our friend would have appreciated that at least, because a lot of us hadn't seen each other in years. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's what I've been dealing with. But, how have you been?
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Way to bring up a downer to start the show, huh? You're just sitting in court for a murder.
I wear black.
You do wear a lot of black. Well, we're off to a bang-up start right here. I did a little impromptu vinegar talk. You brought the law and order. You mentioned the slow wheels of justice, which was a little dig at our legal system here in the United States. So, yeah. And if you're asking how I am, well, let me tell you by saying this. Play dough. You may think I said Play-Doh, but I didn't. I made a sound of agony, of pain. Even though Play-Doh is a fun thing, it comes in a cup and, you know, it gets stuck in your rug. This is more on the lines of being a dad, which you can kind of relate to, can't you, Nate?
Sure. I also know Play-Doh gets stuck in pubic hair.
Oh, this is a story we might have to reserve for a later date. I would say tell me now, but I don't want you to bring up flow.
I'm all set.
Because I'm all about that hustle and flow mofo.
The less about that, the better.
So, yeah. Yeah. So. Well, we're going to put a pin in that. I'm not saying it's going away completely, entirely, or forever. But as of right now, definitely, boop, there it goes up on the wall.
With the balsamic.
With the balsamic. Yeah. Which was completely impromptu, by the way. So I'm very proud of myself for just ripping that off.
You're a freestyler.
My brain cells are freaking clicking in high gear. Unlike, like you said, those wheels of, trying to look for another word for justice system, but I couldn't do it. So there you go. Yeah. I'm full of shit. My brain isn't very good after all. But anyway, back to the thing at hand. play dates. Play dates. When we were kids, just called hanging out, man. Didn't need a label. Play date. Like, it didn't need to be assigned. But even then, when I say kids, too, people who've listened to this program before know I'm kind of general. It could be anywhere between the ages of zygote to 18 when I say kids. But when we were younger, I never had anybody over my house. Ever. Like, yeah. People didn't come to hang out at my pad, not once. So for me, it was a little awkward because, you know, the way I was raised, I had a single mother, okay, yeah, who was gay and smoked a bunch of weed.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this not to, you know, bring down the image of my mom, because she did a hell of a job. Obviously, look at me.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with those things anyway.
Well, no. I'm a peach, and yeah, it's just back then there was like this whole, well, I mean, for one, smoking a whole bunch of dope thing, you know, you don't want the kids coming in, hey, fucking house reeks of freaking weed, guy. What are you doing, being raised by Cheech and Chong?
Right, right.
The whole lesbian thing, that was an entire issue upon itself, you know what I mean? He didn't want people to find out back then.
Sure.
Because then, you know, that'd be... aspersions would be cast.
Yeah.
And
stigmas
indeed. Yeah. But I mean, I also had, like we just said, there's nothing wrong with that. My whole thing was because I think I watched too much television. I had this almost sitcom-esque view of reality, thinking that if anything was out of place like that, that you know, it wasn't right and people were going to judge me for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you, on the other hand, would always have people over your home when we were teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
Your place was crawling with friends, hanging out, eating your food, enjoying your parents' spoils. You know?
We took advantage, that's for sure.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
You did not have the same situation I did, where you weren't worried about people coming over and smelling dope and... you know,
sure,
gay jokes or whatever. But I say all this to you now, I guess, to kind of present how I approach life as a parent, because I don't care if my son has friends over. No big deal. It's not a big deal for me. I don't mind. I encourage it because I never had that when I was a kid. But, you know, with COVID and what have you, we haven't had many visitors lately. And even if we could, it's not like he ever invites people over. I don't know if that's like just the new thing or what have you. He doesn't go over to a lot of people's houses either.
Yeah.
Hence why it's a play date, right? It's something that has to be arranged, scheduled, designed. Right.
It's an appointment.
Okay. Right. So last week we had one. Ooh, baby. We're going to have a play date at my house. So you know what? I cleaned. I made this place look spotless. Not that it was that bad. I'm not living in, you know, a kitty litter box here or anything. Hell, I don't even own a cat. But I still wanted to be, you know, nice and schnazzy. I wanted to be the cool dad, ultimate dad powers on effect. I ordered some Domino's pizza. I had a movie I rented all lined up, ready to rock and roll. Like, these guys were going to have the best time of their life. My son would grow up someday, become mega successful, look back upon his life. I'm choking up thinking about it. And say, my dad rented Sonic 2 for that play date. And that's why I am who I am today. You know what I mean?
And then, building the new generation.
Yeah, the new generation. Mm. There you go. Like Pepsi. And then the kid fucking canceled. He got an ear infection and couldn't come over. So I spent all this money on freaking Domino's pizza and movies and entertainment. We're going to have a good old time. And yeah, just me and my kid watching Sonic 2.
Wow, whoop-dee-doo. You wouldn't have wasted all that money on you and your kid.
Whoop-dee-doo, yeah. Well, I mean, you know me with money. I always can allocate it to other things, selfishly, because that's how I roll. That's what I do. I only care about myself, truly, intrinsically. But anyway, so we're like, well, maybe next week, right? Kid had an earache. What are you going to do? Sickly little bastard. It is what it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. So here we are today. Today is 1 week from the cancellation. Oh, and I swore to myself, I'm not going to clean today. This kid's walking into whatever kind of house I got. And it is what it is. I'm not renting nothing. I'm not buying nothing. No way, no how. Uh-uh. And what was I just doing before we hopped on air together? Mopping. Cleaning.
Yeah.
One thing I did do, I cut corners on the pizza business because I bought a frozen pizza and a bag of chips.
Yeah, man, don't risk that delivery fee or whatever.
No, well, not even the fee, just this freaking processed crap in a box I'm spending all this money on. It ain't good for you.
No.
You know, avoid the noid, brah. For real. You know, but anyway, I'm talking all about this because, you know, I don't know how you approach it now with your stepson. Does he ever have people over? Even our listeners, like, what do you guys do with your kids? Is it like, okay, real quick, we had a friend of ours named Bob. You know Bob. Yeah, when he was a fucking kid, holy cow, his house was like Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
His mom was feeding people. Bing, bang, boom. It's almost like one of those movies where you see they had an ethnic family. Everybody's going to come over. Everybody's going to eat. You know what I mean? Like, you think you're part of the group.
Right.
Your blood, right. Baby.
Yeah.
I don't, that's such a foreign thing to me. Even when I went over his house, I felt like weird. I'm like, what? How do people exist like this? This intrusion.
Yeah. I hear that.
You know?
Yeah. I definitely had my share of people over as a kid. I think I didn't have huge parties all the time, but by the time I was a teenager, you know, like my folks would go away for like week vacations and they kind of would trust my brother and I, and we would occasionally have like a good party, you know, a few people over, spending the week over there sometimes, which was fun. But yeah, man, like when I was real young, I'd have parties here or there, but you asked about how things are with Joey nowadays. He is very similar. I don't know if it's as similar as your son. I'm saying, like, I don't know if it's something about just the way people grow up now with virtual hangouts and screens and playing on Xbox Live, you know, or whatever online. It seems like a lot of the hangouts are virtual and they're like, you know, I'd rather just sit in my room on a screen rather than like go out and do something. And this way I can do that and hang out with a friend. So why would I go over there? Like that's the vibe I get from Joey.
Right.
But he, he'll have a hangout once in a great while. And when he does, I love it because I've kind of been able to mold Joey into like showing him good movies that my opinion of good movies.
Your humble opinion.
Yes. Yes. Right. So we've now got a bunch of kids that are, you know, 15 now, but probably at the time they might've been 13 or 12 that all of a sudden are huge Big Trouble in Little China fans.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm spreading that
age
good word.
Inappropriate films.
Oh, it wasn't that bad. Well, it's not like there's nudity and stuff in that, you know. Those kids are 12. Like I said, they were 12, 13 at the time. I was seeing those movies or Big Trouble in Little China anyway. Mm-hmm. I saw that when I was probably 8, 9, you know. So
who the fuck are you to defy the Movie Ratings, whatever, Association of America? Who?
What was Big Trouble in Little China rated?
I have no idea. You should know. You love the damn movie. It's your favorite movie. You can't remember? Google that. Get on that
guess
right now.
It's PG, but I'm going to look.
I'm going to guess XXX.
Oh, yeah.
Let Kim Cattrall went down on. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Let's find out. Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
Was rated PG-13. So if they were 13, they were right on time.
Well, guess what? You're not right on time because in the 80s, PG-13 to this day's standards with inflation is like being XXX.
That's true. There were PG movies with swears in them back then and PG-13. Yeah, the amount, I think they go by like the amount of like the word fuck, like how many times that appears and like things like that or like sexuals, whatever.
It's like nowadays, Short Circuit, man. It was rated PG. And then you see that Ali Sheedy anal bead scene and you go, how the hell did they get away with that? How?
Yeah, I know, man. Like the amount of times there were like homophobic slurs said by like little kids in movies back then, like, you know, I don't want to get myself canceled, but the other F word, if you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Like I was watching a movie like The Gate, which was like a horror movie from when we were kids. And it was more or less like it's all kids in the movie. It's all like young people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the kids are all throwing that word around and lobbing F-bombs and all kinds of I don't, dude, Monster Squad. Do you remember, like, that was like a little kid's movie, more or less. And there was the whole thing about, like, well, this has to be read by a virgin. And they have, like, this one character that's a girl. And she's like, she tries to read this passage and the spell or whatever doesn't work. And they're like, well, I did it with him, but he doesn't count. And it was like this whole scene. I remember being a kid and just, like, confused by that. And then, you know.
Welcome to Reagan's America, Nate.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Make America great again.
Ugh. All right, so Joey's not having anybody over. He's online, hanging with the homies in the virtual chats, whatever.
True.
My kid, he goes over people's houses once in a blue moon. He does, I don't know. He doesn't really do like a lot of online gaming. Yeah. He does a little bit and he plays with his friends and stuff, but it's not overly whatever. Like, I wouldn't even call it sociable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just a lone wolf, man, this kid, I guess. I don't know.
I think the pandemic and everything had a hand in a lot of that too, though, because it made it more normal for young people. Like, when you're young, 2 years is a huge chunk of your life. So that's just, it becomes, well, that's how things are. It's been two whole years. Like, for us, we've, that 2 years is a fraction of our lives. But for a kid, they're just like, well, I guess this is how it is now. We just hang out alone, you know?
Well, I think going over people's houses, too, the, like, the precursor to that was actually doing something outside where it's like, hey, oh, you need to take a dump? Yeah, come over to my house. You can go pop a squat, grab yourself a can of Dr. Pepper while you're at it. Why not? You know, because you're already walking train tracks or something stupid.
Oh, right.
Which is what we used to do back in the day because we were young and stupid. It was like, hey, what do you guys want to do today? Let's hit the train tracks, see how far we can go. Yeah. And maybe we can hit the next town.
Yeah, we were like hobos.
Yeah, I know. But it was awesome.
Yeah, sure.
That was the shit. It's almost as if my kid said to me tomorrow, hey, Dad, I'm just going to go walk the train tracks and maybe see how many vagrants I can point out and keep a log of them. I'd be like, oh, that's awesome. Can I come with? That sounds like a blast. But if you told me you're going to Disney World, I'd say, fuck that.
Yeah.
I have no interest in that. But counting hobos... on the side of a dirt path? Oh, man. Now we're talking. That's the good juice right there. That's the jamba juice. Yeah.
It's just good fun.
We used to go underneath, like, the bridges and stuff. I remember there'd be spray paint about, like, necro-bestiality.
Right?
Hey, look at that. That's great. Yeah. Look at that right there. That's art. That's what that is. That's someone's expression. Right?
Now they call it graffiti artists. They call them graffiti artists.
No. Now you got to identify. That's what you got to do. I identify as a necrobestialist. What? Is that on your Twitter profile? No. Come on now. But now I'm getting gross. I'm getting weird. And
that's how we like you.
You know what? Maybe people shouldn't allow their children over my house. he's in the back room right now talking to his buddy. They got this podcast and he's saying some weird shit. So yeah. Not a cool guy. Take away his dad powers.
He's talking about taking my kid into train tracks and underpasses and
shit. Yeah, and then you're like, yeah, let's watch some filthy films.
Filthy, John Carpenter
dirty
movies.
John Carpenter. Yes, indeed. So, well, anyway, everything's still planned today. Let's see if the kid shows up. He's going to get his frozen pizza, his potato chips, his high C. That was the other thing, too, is we're texting the mother of the kid last week, like looking for any dietary restrictions.
Yeah.
Before I ordered the Domino's, which isn't a sponsor, doesn't pay me at all. So I shouldn't keep saying their name so often.
Yeah.
But he's like, nah, pepperoni for the kids good. So we get the pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, that's another thing you didn't have to ask about back in the day, you know?
Do I need an EpiPen?
Yeah, right.
Is this necessary? You know what I mean?
Do I have to clear my house of all peanut products before he comes in?
Yeah. Does he insist on doing hot yoga after a meal?
It sounds like the kid, you might need to ask about those things. He's sickly enough where he's already canceling play dates. And
I feel bad. I shouldn't have called him that. He's just a child. But he is coming down with all this weird shit, like, all the time. It's almost to the point where you think, is that, like, the excuse? Like, it's a setup before they cancel?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, he puked the other day. He's got this ear infection. Oh, he had COVID 2 weeks ago. Oh, this and that. Okay. Yeah. So what's all this info for? What are you giving me the fucking medical file for? What's happening? You're not going to make it Friday or what? Come on.
Right. You know,
it's fucking, it's like they're
preparing you for the, Yeah, preparing you for the cancellation, you know.
Yeah, I don't like that. Because I think I've done that. I've kind of like...
Oh, I know I have.
Give them the laundry list of excuses before canceling on somebody for something, you know?
Yeah, just keep the options open.
Yeah, because you're hoping, like, during that whole time, it's almost like you're pleading to them, like, just tell me not to bother. Please, please. And that's when I got my toe amputated. That was Tuesday. And then Wednesday, you wouldn't believe the craziest thing happened to me. I was watching the anal bead scene with Ally Sheedy in Short Circuit, and all of a sudden, I strained a muscle in my neck.
Darndest thing.
Darndest thing. What a coinky-dinker right there. But, you know, I am very interested in our listeners' perspective on all this. We do, on occasion, get some nice emails, and I would like some more. So if you are a parent, or maybe you want to be a parent, or maybe you imagine being a parent, maybe you've seen a parent on TV. I don't know. But if you have any opinions on this or any of the other topics that we've talked about on this show, make sure you email sellingoutshow@gmail.com or hit us up on the socials, Selling Out Show, Twitter and Instagram, and at Selling Out Show 1 on the book.
Sweet.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing, too. I don't really do the social media with other parents.
Yeah.
I know my mom. My mom would fucking never have done that shit. I remember she used to get pissed that when I was in Little League, and I only played for like a season, they made it mandatory the parents had to work the snack bar. And I'd be pissed about that, too. I'd be like, what the fuck? You know how much I got to pay for all this shit? I got to pay for the uniforms. I got to bring his ass to practice. And now you're telling me I got to sling popcorn?
Damn.
What the hell's the matter? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel bad, though. I feel like I'm talking negative about my mom.
That's all right.
I'm like, she smoked a lot of weed. She's gay. She didn't like going, doing the friggin' snack bar. But she worked very hard for two ungrateful fucking children. Ungrateful. We were horrible kids.
I think you're making her seem relatable more than anything, Dave.
Okay, good. Because I did not grow up with any money. We grew up fucking poor. That was the other thing. I remember when we were kids, our refrigerator broke, and thank God we lived in New England, because to keep the milk cold, we put it outside the window in the snow.
Mm.
But we couldn't afford a new fridge. But I'm saying this as a setup, because this is like one of the worst things ever, was that she didn't make a ton of money, but when she'd go grocery shopping, she'd come home with the bag. She must have felt fucking great. Like, hey, I am a provider. Look at this. The bounty I am bringing home. Me and my brother, man. The moment she came through the door, raided those fucking bags, like ate shit before we could even put it away.
Right.
And like, she used to freak out, like, you ate all the groceries. That was all the groceries for the week, and you ate them in 2 hours. Yeah. So, yeah. Just let her know what kind of shitty kids she had to deal with.
Hungry boys, man.
Balance it out. Yeah. Let's balance it out. So I won't keep you updated on how it goes with the play date today. I'll save it to mystery.
All right. If you want to know, write us.
Yeah, write us, tweet us, or Instagram us, which I guess is weird because Instagram is about pictures. So what would you do?
Yeah.
DM us, slide into our DMs. Right? That's what they call it. Am I hip with the kids, hip with the lingo? Imagine that. We get a play date, and I'm like, hey, you guys enjoying the movie? Yeah. Do you guys ever slide into each other's DMs?
Yeah.
We'd be like, what? Guys, come on. It ain't all just about hula hoops and Nintendo games. I know what's cool with the kids. But anyway, you know, speaking of youth, talking about all that, I maybe for those factors that I just brought up, I'm really into collecting things. And I say this because growing up poor and not having a lot of things and having kind of like a weirder, offbeat childhood, you connect more to physical items or you know, whether it be action figures, comics in my case, those kind of things or whatever, because they bring you joy. They bring you happiness. There's a nostalgia factor to them because of that moment in time that maybe your life wasn't so great or a little different. And you're like, wow, that's what was my island in the sea of uncertainty.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you carry those things with you as an adult. As we all know, nostalgia, geez Louise, is its own industry. Now, you know what I mean? People can't get enough of nostalgia, whether it's rebooting TV shows. You know, like, who the fuck wanted Fuller House? Who? Who? I mean, like, for real, you really want to see the what happened with the Tanner family in the future? Aren't some things better left unsaid?
Man, could DJ become like a fucking crackhead?
Nah, she's a veterinarian.
Oh, okay, so it's similar.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Fucking getting high on that ketamine. but anyway, I've been, like I said, collecting things my whole adult life. And it's great because when you're an adult, you finally got money for shit, too. So I guess this kind of ties into why nostalgia is so popular because, you know, we've grown up and they're like, oh, we can get your wallet. That's what we can do.
Right.
We can come and seize your cash because we know you liked He-Man so much that you will pay to have this He-Man action figure reissue, whatever. And so we got you.
Yep.
I've been collecting action figures, which is kind of lame for a dude in his 40s to be collecting action figures and keeping them in boxes. I mean, it's a stereotype. It really is. It's like that nerdy ass fucking like, oh, I'm not going to open the box. This could be worth some money someday. But realistically, the value for anything is because people didn't treat shit with respect back in the day, you know, making it rare.
Right. But and now that everyone treats it that way, that's it's less rare for it to be in perfect shape.
It ain't worth shit. Yeah. That's the thing. It ain't worth a goddamn thing. I mean, whatever. However much a mold of plastic costs, 92 cents, and the, you know, labor costs in Taiwan, which is probably even less than that per hour.
Yeah, man.
Actually,
but it brings you joy.
Yeah, but that gives me a good idea for the play date today. I said good idea instead of a good idea. Mm. I can put the kids into labor. Wait, what? Forced labor.
Oh, that's better.
I can have them start fucking putting shirts together and manufacturing things. And you know what's even better? Is I can get all the components from different countries, bring them here, have child labor do it, and then just say assembled in USA and people buy the hell out of it.
That's right, man.
But I recently was like, man, I don't know. I think I'm going to give up on something. And the reason why I say this is there's in the action figure world, a thing called pre-orders. They announce it. You can order it ahead of time. So when it's released, you know, you got it at that price point, everything else. Sure. And there was a figure that I really, really wanted. Like the moment it was announced, I was like drooling. Like, oh yeah, I want that. Like a motherfucking desert needs a rain, man. Give me that shit. And I recently stopped, thought about it. I mean, we're just kind of like my life situations as is and what's going on. I'm like, do I really need this? I want it so bad. Right. It's such an immature thing to want this of all things, you know? And it's not like it was super cheap either.
Right.
And so I canceled my pre-order.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was a big deal for me. It was like, wow, you know?
That's pretty fucking, that's a big step, Dave. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, there's been other moments in my life I've had to say no.
Yeah.
Especially in the whole realm of collecting. And I won't bore you all half to death with the stories of it because I could go on. I mean, really a long time talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm like, am I done? Is this it for me? Like, what is it going to take? Like, what special item in action figures would it make me say I cannot live without this? I already have a lot. So, I mean, maybe I am done. Maybe that's it. Maybe the goose is cooked on collecting plastic, you know? It's like with me and the comics, I can never give those up. But the comics are more, okay, right? Action figures, when you're a kid, you play with them. When you're an adult, you keep them in the box. Comics are a story. I want to read them. I don't collect them just to, like, keep them in a piece of plastic and whatever. I don't deal with them. I don't trade them. I don't sell them. I read them and enjoy them. So it's something I can't read. And I love stories. I love entertainment. I can't quit them.
Yeah.
But the action figures is a static thing that just fucking sits there on my shelf.
And it's a decoration.
Yes, thank you. A decoration. I enjoy looking at them, but I could probably go without. So how about you? Is there anything out there that you're like, man, you know, back in the day, I wanted this so fucking bad, or I dedicated years of my life to this thing. Now I don't need this shit.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I definitely have had my fill of like feeling like I need this, like whether it's musical equipment, CDs back in the day, band shirts. I went through a period of just like ordering band shirts and thinking like that feeling of anticipation when you know it's coming in the mail, and then when it finally shows up, it's great. But then after a while, you're like, that's just another one of my shirts. And but I also have had some situations in my life where I'm like, you know, all those things, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, I don't think you're like wasting money by buying things like that, or should feel bad about it. Because honestly, like, what else would you spend your money on? You spend, as long as you got your needs met, that's the important thing. Obviously, if you can't afford your bills and whatnot, then you need to.
I hate that. Bills.
Well, who doesn't? But I'm saying if those are taken care of, then it's like everyone's got something they like, whether you're eating an expensive meal or you go to see a movie or you're buying action figures or, you know, whatever it may be. And yeah, I mean, I bought an expensive bass not long ago that my whole life I've wanted a fretless bass. And then I saw that there was a 5-string fretless bass, which is even more of a luxury for me. And you know what? I mean, I've had it for not quite a year yet, but probably about half a year actually, but it's still bringing me tons of joy. But that's one of those things that I use to make music. So it's like, I'm constantly using it, but yeah, man, I don't know. I come at it from a different side because I've lost a ton of shit. I know, I'm sure we've all lost a ton of shit, but in my life, like, there were times that I'd like get locked up and have a bunch of stuff at an apartment that I just lost because I couldn't, you know, I had no one to go clean out my apartment. So it just
chucked it.
Yeah. Whatever, cool. You know,
that hurts. That's painful.
And it's happened more than once. So anyway, I've kind of learned that whole, like, don't get too attached to stuff is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if it brings you joy, there's no shame in it either. So I don't know, man, it's, you just got to find that balance of like, this brings me joy, so I'm at peace with craving it or wanting it. But at the same time, you can't fall apart if you can't get it or if you lose it. That's, it's a fine line, a balance that we all got to find, you know. But we all have it, I think. I don't think there's anything strange about, you know, spending money obsessively on collectibles because, yeah, like I said, we all have our things.
Very well said, Nate. And I think for anybody who had listened to our previous episode, with my health bombshell about my hip, I'm going to have the surgery, so I'm going to be out of work for a while. My finances are going to be a wee bit out of whack. You know what I mean? So sure. With that being said, spending money on action figures was also kind of like, that's going to hit right when I'm out for a while. Christmas is right around the corner. Do I really want to be buying all this stuff for myself? I do, but should I, you know? So that's where I was at. I think I'm just gonna, take this as an opportunity, man, to let it go, to say, hey, you know, you gotta be it really special for me to say, I am gonna buy you and put you on my shelf. But when you said people were throwing, or landlords or whoever were throwing your stuff out, oh, that's the worst. That's like a punch right to the plums. There's nothing you can do. Your crap is just out there and someone else is going to take it.
Yep.
That sucks.
Or it just gets tossed. I know, I've had so many like full CD collections and clothes, things like that. I mean, I never had a ton of like expensive shit, but I had stuff that was important to me, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and I struggled with that stuff a lot too. I lost a lot of tapes and CDs of music that we'd recorded together with friends or other bands that I was in and stuff like that. And that stuff you can't even get back, you know? I mean,
that's nostalgia you made.
Yeah.
You created that. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are like tangible memories, you know, that you can literally go back and listen to. And I just don't have them anymore. And that I struggled with that for a long time. But you know what? It's just, I eventually learned that it's in the experience of making it as opposed to having the thing, the shiny thing at the end of the process. It's like,
okay,
I don't know. It's nice to have a little thing to a memento, but memories are important. And I don't know. That's what I tell myself anyway. So I don't hang it up. That's all.
Let me ask you this then, my friend, Mr. Zen Master over there.
Yeah.
Is there something that you couldn't live without? Is there something right now in your life that has stood the test of time? You're like, hey, man, I don't care what it is as far as what it costs or, you know, where I got to carry it, where I got to take it, whatever the case may be. But I really want it. I never want to lose it. Got to think about that one, huh? The brain is boining.
Yeah, man, because I feel like I'm finally at a place where I know I'd be okay. You know what I mean? Like, it would suck. There are some things that would be really painful to lose, but I feel comfortable with the fact that I know ultimately I'd be okay. And that's, maybe that came from just, ending up in shitty spots or whatever it is, but whatever it is, I'm grateful that I'm at that spot because... Yeah, man. That's nice. But why? Aside from your collectibles, is there anything you feel that way about?
I know. I was gonna. If you were gonna flip the script and turn the question on me, I was gonna say my comics, dude. Yeah. You know. So yeah, no, not really. As far as physical things.
Yeah.
No, because we're not talking about people or pets or anything like that.
Exactly.
You know? We're just talking about stupid shit.
Yeah, man.
So for me, definitely my collectibles. Oh, I love them. I love that I have them. Even the action figures I'm ready to give up on. The ones I own. Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. That's good stuff. But no, that's about it.
Right on.
For moi. For me. You know, I think I missed a really good opportunity to plug that last episode even more. Because I was like, the health bombshell. I should have fucking made that into like a Dateline commercial or something. You know?
Yeah, well,
kind of did more with that, making people interested. Who, you know, hopefully you've all listened to our back catalog of shows. But if you hadn't, and this is your first time here, welcome. But then, too, I should have sold that better to you. I really should have.
Yeah.
Made it seem much more dramatic.
And if you didn't hear last episode, you don't want to miss it.
You can't live without it. You can't. This is the one thing you cannot give up in your life.
Yeah, man.
Coming this fall.
That's better. Maybe we should erase the whole part before that.
Yep. Delete.
All right.
010011. I'm doing binary shit. Deleting. Nice. Woo-woo. So, yeah. I think we're ready to move on from this. What do you say, Nate?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get back to our roots here.
Okay.
The program. Because you know what? We've had a segment since day one.
Mm-hmm.
The first fucking episode. And that's a little thing we call Nate's Notes. But before we do, I want to thank the partners of the show. I almost said programs. I said Peshow, which could be a thing. Look it up in the dictionary, people. It's real.
It's got a silent P, actually.
Yeah, sure. We got a really cool coupon code to give away that I really desperately wish that people don't sleep on because it's a big one. It's a good one. I just mentioned Christmas is right around the corner. And as a matter of fact, I'm already buying Christmas stuff. I mentioned I was going to go broke because I need to fix my health. Welcome to America.
Mm.
Welcome to the US of A where you get sick and all of a sudden, boop, you know, there you go. There goes your savings. But anyway. It's supposed to be a plug for, like I said, our sponsors. And I'm like, me.
And we're talking about the dangers of unfettered capitalism in our ad breaks.
Yeah. Jeez. My whole point was like, buy this stuff now because we got a coupon code for it and it's perfect for Christmas. And you're ahead of the curve, which is a good thing. If you like vaping, if you like relaxing with products such as Delta 8 Sativa, I guess that's the thing that's hip with the kids now. I'll ask at the play date, you kids ever try any sativa? no, that's ill-advised as well. But anyway, these following companies, you can use code SELLINGOUT20 and you'll save 20% off your entire order, which is fucking incredible. And those sites are alpinehemp.com, northlandvapor.com, deathbygummybears.com, and wonkyweeds.com. All of these sites have, so many different products you can choose from. I did mention Death by Gummies. Well, there you go. The name of their products is right in there, dummies. Gummies. Everybody likes gummies. But I mean, seriously, they got stuff for pets, tinctures, creams, ointments, balms. I think I'm sticking with skincare right now. Northland Vapor is the exclusive e-liquids that I use. I love them. Big fan of their Blue Raz flavor. So yeah, yet again, check those websites out and use code SELLINGOUT20 to enjoy a 20% discount off your entire order. And guess what? You can keep reusing it. It's not like a one-time code either. So stock up, Buttercup. And then last but not least, I want to thank Spunk Lube. That's right. This is the lube used by professionals in the adult film industry. But why let them have all the fun? You can have Spunk Lube delivered discreetly to your front door right now by visiting spunklube.com. Try them today and you can thank me later. Now, we are on, like I said, with that time-tested age-old segment called Nate's Notes. Let's fucking do this, baby.
Dust off your LPs. It's time for Nate's Notes.
We were wild kids, both Dave and I, as well as the rest of our group of friends. We were open-minded, creative people for the most part. A bunch of us played in bands. Some of us played in more than one. I know it doesn't always happen this way, but being open-minded and artsy can sometimes go hand in hand with drug experimentation. Maybe it's the way music affected us, like how, for me, long before trying any drug, music could almost transport my mind to other places. It was like a pseudo-hallucinogenic experience before I even understood what that was. I would listen to music, and if it was done right, I wouldn't hear musicians playing in a studio. I'd hear like the soundtrack to some weird visuals going on in my mind. I don't know if that's a form of synesthesia, but that's the best way I can describe it. So when I discovered weed, and then, of course, other psychedelics like acid or mushrooms, those bright and vivid images that music showed me came alive even more so. And when I would write music with friends under these conditions, I was only really happy with the finished product when I got that same feeling of, this doesn't sound like a band, it sounds like the background music on an alien planet or something. Or at least those songs were the ones of which I was most proud. By the time I started playing shows, however, I was dabbling in drugs that were less conducive to creativity. My mind, it seemed, was so open that all sense poured out of it, and I started trying the substances that everyone knows are bad news. I guess I figured they lied to me about how dangerous psychedelics and pot are. Maybe all the negative hype surrounding meth and opiates is overblown too. Spoiler warning, my hypothesis was flawed. They may have been exaggerating about getting stoned and tripping, but all the bad press about the hardcore shit is pretty spot on. I never had some big break or real shot at the big time that I subsequently sabotaged, nothing so specific. But my band Split was doing pretty well for a local Worcester band in the late 90s. Regular gigs, CDs, and other merch that were selling pretty well, and some connections with big national acts that were manifesting into bigger audiences and opportunities to go on the road. It sure had the feeling of momentum. But we were young and we were a little irresponsible with our partying. Some of us drank too much. Some loved pills like Xanax and Valium. Some of us were already strung out on heroin and hitting detoxes. I remember Dave's aunt's boyfriend, Derek, saying something about how we were doing it backwards. You're supposed to achieve some sort of success before you get all messed up on drugs. I guess we just figured we were ahead of the curve. Our heroes were people like David Bowie, Trent Reznor, Kurt Cobain, Layne Staley, people that not only didn't conceal their drug use, they often wrote about it. The drugs were like a muse for some really powerful material. The problem was that all that material overshadowed the negative consequences that came with that lifestyle. I mean, we heard stories in the tabloids about Dave Gahan from Depeche Mode being arrested and almost dying from heroin. Of course, Kurt Cobain had killed himself by that point, but I was almost too young to really even process or truly comprehend the implications of that. At the time, Lane Staley was alive. I'll stop short of "and well." And I just knew his lyrics to songs like "Junkhead" and "Sick Man" as kick-ass poetry. I missed the inherent warning in them, blatant and spelled out as it was. To hijack a phrase, "so I made a big mistake, try to see it once my way." My bands collapsed, things got dark, life went on from there, but that was basically the end of any rock star fantasies I may have had. As I've gotten older, I've come to a sense of peace about how my life turned out. I'm in a good place, finally. I've started playing music again. I'm learning all the scales and music theory that I skipped over as a kid. And that, along with some really nice new instruments that I've since gotten, has made me more enthusiastic than ever about making music. And I know things could have been far worse. I mentioned Kurt Cobain and Lane Staley back there. And of course, they stand as symbols for not only the amazing Seattle music scene of the early 90s, but also for the dangers of obtaining superstardom when you have a crippling addiction issue. That weird curse of getting everything you want when what you want is potentially deadly and you have a problem with moderation. I often feel bad for the other guys in Nirvana or Alice in Chains, who survived not only the implosion of their planned career path, but also the loss of a close friend. But to keep it in that same Seattle scene, imagine how the guys in Mother Love Bone must have felt. For those unfamiliar with that name, Mother Love Bone were the first band who attracted the national spotlight to Seattle back then, before Nirvana, before Alice in Chains. Mother Love Bone were being plucked from obscurity on their way to superstardom. Their singer, Andy Wood, was a charismatic, talented, and natural showman. Critics would call him the only stand-up comic frontman in the Seattle scene. Unfortunately, Andy also had a history of opiate use and had been in treatment multiple times. I guess he thought he was ahead of the curve, too. They recorded their major label debut LP, Apple, and the wheels were in motion. Days before the record's release date, however, Wood was found unresponsive after a heroin overdose. They kept him on life support for a few days so his loved ones could say goodbye. And the album Apple was released to positive reviews shortly thereafter. If you don't know the rest of the story, here's the Nate's Notes, Cliff Notes version. Andy's roommate and friend, Chris Cornell of Soundgarden, formed the one-off project Temple of the Dog, named after a line in one of Andy's songs, with Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard from Mother Love Bone. Then Jeff and Stone formed what would ultimately become Pearl Jam in the aftermath, and they've gone on to become one of the biggest bands in the world. You can say all's well that ends well, but remember, there were a few other guys in Mother Love Bone who didn't go on to such lofty heights. Their dreams died with Andrew Wood. Being a fan of all those Seattle bands as a kid, I was always familiar with Mother Love Bone's music, as well as their legend and place in the scene. Andy Wood's story was part of my lexicon, but it didn't really hit home until I was old enough to really relate. I'm sure my addiction made a mess of things for my bandmates. I could always perform, but I would sometimes be late for gigs or miss practice. I had to disappear into detoxes and was just overall unreliable. But at least we weren't on the cusp of some huge break, some huge record deal or tour, and then dropped dead, killing any chances for the rest of the guys. Listen to Uncle Nate, kids. When they tell you heroin is a dead-end street, when they tell you crack is whack, that meth is death, they're not fucking around. It's not some kind of reefer madness propaganda. Psychedelics can potentially be dangerous if treated carelessly, but they're not going to lead you to a life of enslavement or a quick death from overdose. We need more honest and nuanced drug education. It's not as simple as all these substances are equally bad, but some of them genuinely are really bad. There's no need to experiment with those anymore. We've done it for you. Shit. If you can find happiness and inspiration without any of it, I'd say that's your best bet.
Yeah, we used to party.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you brought up my Uncle Derek, or my former Uncle Derek.
Yeah.
He got divorced. So I don't know what you call them now. Ex-family members, like ex-bandmates.
Right.
But he was right. What the hell are you guys doing partying like freaking rock stars? You got to wait until your rock stars to, in fact, party like that. Like, what are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, big mistake. Whoopsie. It is interesting, though, that you had mentioned, hey, at least we weren't super famous, so I didn't fuck anything up that would have, you know, hurt someone financially. But at the same time, you know, kind of fucked up your own life there, Kemosabe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
I've been watching, for some reason, I've been on this kick of like watching documentaries on Lane Staley and Andrew Wood and like a lot of that stuff, man. Even old Nirvana footage and stuff. It's like, I hadn't thought of that stuff in a long time. Like that's all the beginning of my musical experience was all those bands that came out right as I was like 12, you know, and just getting into music. So for some reason, it's like, yeah, I've been just getting back into all of it. And yeah, the story of Andy Wood just kind of, you know, it's similar to even Sublime, like that whole story of Bradley Nowell from Sublime. He died right as they were taking off. Like they weren't quite at that point. Like Andrew Wood died right before their debut album came out. Like at least Sublime had an album out already and they were like working on their second or third record, whatever it was, when Bradley overdosed and ruined it for the rest of his fucking band. You know, I mean, I know it's not just that he ruined it for himself. He ruined it for his family. He had a baby, Bradley Nowell anyway, did, you know, he had a dog. He had his dog, Lou Dog there, you know? So, but it's just, I just think about that, like, man, you know, at least we made it through there. We've had friends die since. We've had friends die when we were young like that. But we, I don't know, we still have a chance, man.
We do.
Yeah.
I think a problem was the influence of celebrity. You know, you would think back then, oh, yeah, man, fucking screw celebrities, screw all this stuff. We're into, like, this music scene that's different, right? It's not the norm. We are the counterculture.
Yeah.
But looking up to them and keeping these rock stars as our idols, that's what they were doing. They were doing drugs, so it's got to be cool to do drugs. It's got to be cool to be, you know, imitating these icons, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I guess choose wisely. Uncle Nate tried to give you a lesson earlier there, kiddos. Mm. I would say the same as a parent now. I mean, if my kid was into, I don't know what's hip now. I don't know what's trending. But if there was, let's say, the new version of Kurt Cobain or something, I'd kind of be conscious of it and weary of someone who's, you know, publicly a junkie. And dude, I know they're successful and I know that's great and everything, but at the same time, it's like, do I really want my kid looking to this person as, and you know, someone to emulate?
Sure. Dude, like recently there have been, I mean, now it's actually probably a couple of years since, but there were a ton of these, like that whole scene. It's not quite mumble rap. It's like hip hop, but they mix kind of indie rock with it. It's like everything's kind of blended now. I'm an old guy trying to like analyze the young kids' music.
Sure.
But there was all this stuff. There were these bands like Lil Peep was a guy that was this huge. He was, again, yeah, like just getting huge. Not my style of music, but the kids loved him and looked up to him. And there's another one named Mac Miller. They're both like, these are rappers, but they did more than just rap. Like they produced some interesting music. And, but the thing is, they were so open about their drug use. It was very similar. And nowadays it's all things like Xanax. Like everyone's doing, there was a rapper named Lil Xan, like X-A-N, Lil Xan. And his whole thing was just being all fucked up. And so it's still there and it's almost, I don't know. Like everyone's doing fentanyl now and
Yeah, there's a reason why kids are cooking chicken with NyQuil, man. You know? You know, I wasn't trying to make it sound like it's such an isolated thing. Times change, yet they never change, right? I mean, really, it's just my kid's so young. He's only 10, so it's not like he's really into music like that.
Not listening to Lil Xan yet.
Yeah, no Lil Xan up in my house. No, no, no. But the day is young. Who knows what could happen later? Be cranking those jams, some mumble rap up in here. Yeah, who knows? I don't know. But I can't keep up, man. It's too much fucking shit. I just got fucking bifocals.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I need to get some.
See, look at that.
I do. My eye doctor was telling me, I'm going to need to get, and I wear contacts. I didn't even know they made like bifocal contacts where it's like, if you look up, if you look down, I don't even know how that works.
Yeah.
But
it's funny because I was just saying that to kind of, you know, show how old I am and how hard it is for me to maybe see what's up with the youth because, hey, you know, I'm at the age now. I'm having hip replacement surgeries. I'm having bifocals going on here. I mean,
I've fallen and I can't get up.
That's right, Mrs. Fletcher. I'm at that point. I've fallen. I just can't get up anymore. But and that's it. But my point is in an effort to show how uncool I am, you were like, I need those too.
Yeah.
So you're my demographic, brah.
That's right.
That's what you are. And here's another thing. When you find other people that wear bifocals, don't say bifocals. They're going to say, hey, those are trifocals. There's three.
Explain.
Three points of vision in them. It's not like the old school. You get the line and you just look down to see something close. Now there's a, you know, you can see far, near, and close and no lines on the lenses.
Just blends, just like fades.
Fucking smooth as smooth can be, man. So, that's crazy. No one even knows. I'm incognito.
Wow.
Dude, trifocal.
You know what? I was saying, because I wear contacts all the time, and I don't understand how that works with making it, because as the lens is over your pupil where you see, if you look like through lenses, like glasses, if you look down a little bit to read, then you're looking through that section of the lens. But with contacts, the lenses move with your damn eyes. Yeah. So how is it? But
science.
But my mother, back in the day, I remember she would, because she started having to, you know, if she wore her contacts, it helped her see far away, but she couldn't see up close while wearing them. So she would wear one lens for a while. And I'm like, I tried doing that for a while and that just fucks you all up. Cause it's like one of your eyes can see far away and one of them can see close up and your brain's got to get used to it. And man, talk about feeling like you're on drugs.
Oh, yeah, forget about it. But, you know, I think now that we're bonding over bifocals and vision and stuff, we have bad influences even at our age. I mean, we're looking up to people like Wilford Brimley, for crying out loud.
Yeah, man. That's true.
You know, I mean, did you know there's like a Twitter account called the Wilford Brimley Line? Because here's the thing about this guy, right? We all know diabetes and everything else. He was not that old when he did Cocoon.
Wow. Yeah.
He wasn't that old. He was like in his early 50s or something. So this account shares celebrity birthdays when they hit the same age that Wilford Brimley was when he did the movie Cocoon. Just the other day, Jared Leto was featured. Yes! He is at the age that will Google how old Jared Leto is. Do that.
Right now?
Yeah, because you got a phone in front of you, don't you? This is exciting radio, what we're doing right here. This is it. Yeah. So let's hop on our fucking devices here.
World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm. Do that, please.
All right. Jared Leto is, let's see, he is 50.
There you go.
Get out of here.
There you go.
1971. Wow.
Yeah. You're shocked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Wilford Brimley was 50 when he was in Cocoon, allegedly.
Yes, this was the thing. He was 18,530 days old, 9 months and whatever. I'm trying to read something too with my trifocals. So motherfucker was 50 when he did Cocoon. So this whole account is just like dedicated to alerting people when someone has crossed the Wilford Brimley line.
You know, so first of all, we talked about Big Trouble in Little China being a John Carpenter film. I think of Wilford Brimley. Often I think of The Thing, which was another movie Wilford Brimley was in. And he didn't have a mustache in it. So it was weird seeing Wilford Brimley without a mustache in The Thing. But then other than that, I always thought that Wilford Brimley, they totally missed an opportunity. They could have had him selling shoes and athletic wear for Adidas, and he would say, buy Adidas.
All right.
I'm just going to let that hang.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
So.
Well, we're not at the Wilford Brimley line yet. We're close.
Right.
But we aren't there. So he's still an influence on us, and we just emulate his life. Yeah. And the way he lived it, I mean, yeah, he's just one of those guys. I mean, I don't know how many there really are, but there's always someone you go, geez, I thought they were much older than they really are.
Yeah.
Holy
cow. It's all that Quaker Oats made him look old, I guess.
Yeah, that was it. I don't like oats, so I'm safe.
Yeah, you're good.
I am safe. But I have been using these trifocals. I mean, let me get this out of the way, too. I look fucking hot.
Yeah.
I look super attractive with my glasses on.
Right.
So even though I am approaching the Brimley line, I am one fine piece of meat. But anyway, I've been using them to watch a lot of television, as I do.
Yeah.
I like TV. Yeah. And there's a couple shows I want to tell you and our listeners about because I am getting hip to them. I like them. I'm digging them. And one of which is, have you ever heard of this show on Hulu called This Fool?
No.
Okay, well, This Fool is a comedy. It's like a half an hour thing, too, so it's great if you get a short attention span. Cool. But it's about this one guy, Julio, who lives in South Central L.A., and his cousin just got out of prison, and he works at a rehab center called Hugs for Thugs, where they rehabilitate and reintegrate the ex-con into society to try to lower that recidivism statistic. Yeah. But it's a really funny show. I've really enjoyed it. And something I like, too, is the lead actor on there is he doesn't seem like he was born into acting. Obviously, by looks alone, no. They actually make fun of his appearance quite often, which is humorous. But sometimes he delivers lines and things like that. And you're like, that's just funny because it's just not natural for him. But anyway, your boy is a happily married man. And I'm talking your boy is me.
Yeah.
But oh, my God. There is an actress on the show that plays Julio's girlfriend, Maggie, whose name is Michelle Ortiz. And oh, my gosh. Oh, Nate. I'm hooked. I can't get enough of her on this show. Like, when she's on, I'm just like, look at her. She's fucking stunning. That's like, oh yeah. Don't tell my wife.
And don't tell the girl from the new Predator movie. Predator.
Yeah, she was the other one, Amber Midthunder.
That's right, Midthunder.
So, you know, there we go. We get the Wilford Brimley line. Maybe we should have the David Chicharron line of just like these girls that are on these shows. Are just fucking Dreamweaver worthy.
Like so, Dave's Angels.
But yeah, that show, I highly recommend that. I mean, it's not like funny to the point where you're rolling around on the floor, but it's clever. It's good. I really do enjoy it. And then there was a show on HBO Max that I don't believe is on anymore, but it went for 2 seasons. Maybe you've heard of it, called Vice Principals.
Oh, yeah.
And I was weary of this show initially because it has what's the dude who plays Kenny Powers? What's his
name? Oh, yeah. Danny McBride.
Thank you. Danny McBride, and you initially think, okay, well, it's just Kenny Powers in a high school. Danny McBride is not a very versatile actor.
Sure, he's Danny McBride. Always Danny McBride, yeah.
That's a nice way to put it. He's just Danny McBride.
Like, it's like Vince Vaughn. He's Vince Vaughn in every movie. He's just Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, we're like just making fun of the fact the guy's a crappy actor or whatever, while right now he's sitting in a mansion.
Oh, yeah. It's okay, you know.
Yeah, living his best life. But in season one, his rival is played by the actor Walton Goggins.
Oh, I love Walton
Dude,
Goggins.
Dude, he is so fucking good in this show. There's a couple times in my life, I don't like to defend millionaires or celebrities or what have you, especially when it comes to awards, because you're like, fucking who cares about awards? It's like a whatever popularity contest. But there was a character from Ozark. I don't know if I talked about this on the show.
Oh, man.
Who played the brother, Wendy's brother. I don't have his information in front of me right now, but he got robbed. He should have been nominated. His acting was incredible.
I don't think he mentioned that, or not while I was on the show.
Well, then, you know, your fucking fault, not mine.
Okay.
But anyway, this Goggins motherfucker on season one of Vice Principals, so good. Wow. So good. I'm like, how did he not win an award for this? Huh. Now, just as a warning, season two is an absolute piece of dog shit.
Okay.
So if you watch season one.
That's why it wasn't continued.
Oh, I can see, oh, yeah. Trust you me. I'm like, this sucks. But if you watch season one and just never watch another episode, you're going to be like, this is great. This was cool. Fucking really satisfying. So those are my recommendations. And then if you see the actress from This Fool, make sure you let her know. I'm here. Easily found. She can email me. sellingoutshow@gmail.com. I can, you know, maybe set something up. Not anything, you know, dirty. I am married, happily.
Sure.
Long time, but, you know, just talk.
You just want to bask in her glow.
In her glowness. Yeah, or maybe just, you know, kind of talk to her about acting, her methodology.
Cool.
That could be interesting. Maybe we could have her on the show.
Sure.
We don't ever have guests on this show. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my reasons. Did you have a reason you wanted to say? Because you were about to say something before I interrupted you.
I don't even realize if that's true.
Oh.
I don't think I ever have anything to say.
Oh.
It's just I start talking. Sometimes you cut me off, sometimes not. But I don't ever really have anything important to say.
That's wonderful. This is why you're the best co-host in the biz.
That's right, man.
You're like, I got nothing. You're like the guy from Major League.
Yeah.
Monty.
Yeah.
You're fucking Monty from Major League. But
I write Nate's notes, and that's it.
That's it. That's all you do. One trick pony right here.
Yeah.
But I don't like having guests because, you know, you got to – everybody loves me some me, right?
Sure.
So you like talking about yourself, and especially if you are someone that's got some kind of status, whether it's like D-list or whatever, you could still go on forever just, you know, gloating about your exploits. And that used to happen to me years ago when I did some other podcasts. We would have guests. And you got to ask them questions, and that's all fine and dandy, right? But then they would just go on and on about, you know, how fucking wonderful they are. And then when they tried to be humble, it was all bullshit.
Wow.
So we don't really do guests on this show. And I had a person from another show who's very successful, much more successful than we are, just to keep our humility. He's like, you guys got to do guests, man. You guys got a great format. You and Nate have a lot of chemistry. You need guests, and you're going to go to the fucking next level. And I said, screw you, man. This is fucking punk rock, motherfucker. This is what we
do. What do you know?
What do you know? You know, fucking making all that money on Patreon and living your best life. Fucking people know who you are because you got a fucking podcast. Yeah, fucking suck a fart out my asshole.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I don't need no guests. Yeah. Maybe someday we'll have a guest. Maybe but if we someday. Do... It's going to be, I only want like the weird guests. I don't want anybody who's like on TV unless
we
it's
just
Michelle.
Want Amber Mid-Thunder.
Oh, yeah. I take it all back.
Okay.
Even though with her, you know, I'd have to bring it up.
Yeah.
The Mole.
The Mole. I know.
The Mole.
It's all right, man.
All right. That was me rambling. I've had way too much caffeine. I like pounded a huge thing of coffee while you were doing Nate's notes since I keep quiet to let you, you know. Wax on, wax off.
Yeah. Wax poetic. Wax musical.
Yep. Cool. All that stuff. So, but I think we should probably hit the road.
I'm down.
Get out of here. You know, it's been fun. It's been a blast talking about all the stuff we talked about and hopefully entertaining the listeners out there, the ones that are willing to tune in without us having a big name guest.
Yeah. So, hope so.
I do too. All right.
I hope. Yep, they don't try heroin, and they listen. They listen to Wilford Brimley.
Yeah,
and they buy Adidas.
Buy Adidas. All right. Well, I want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your day to make our show part of it. I appreciate it. Virtual hugs all around. I am Dave. That is Nate, and this has been the Selling Out Show.
Peace. Wake up, you never look so lonely.